And welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Thanks for joining us. I'm Bonnie Berman, and I'm joined today by Peter Jay, who's in his element. Hi, Peter.
Hey. We're not fundraising today,
Bonnie? No, no. It's hard. It's funny being on with you without having fundraising ahead of us. Glad to have you.
Sure, thanks.
Now, Joseph Cooper is recovering from back surgery. We do hope to have him back very, very soon. And Linda Gassenheimer and Fred Tasker, this is Thursday, but Linda and Fred are both on vacation, and they will return next week.
Having a craft beer, no doubt.
Undoubtedly. So May 12th through the 18th was designated as Craft Beer Week in Miami. It was just another sign of the incredible growth and popularity of craft beer. Yes, the lowly beer drink of the masses has now gained elite status. Craft beers are the subject of tastings, they're paired with specific foods, and the breweries that make them are popping up in every corner of the country. Florida may have been late to the game, but we're making up for lost time. Scores of craft brewers are trying to get a foothold in the state. Many are producing world-class brews, and our guest today knows all about it. Gerard Wallen is the author of Florida Breweries. He's a contributing writer for publications including All About Beer Magazine, Beer Advocate Magazine, and craftbeer.com. And he's the founder of beerinflorida.com website. He visited no fewer than 66 breweries around the state, tasted most of the beers, and he's still standing, or sitting as the case is. Hi, Gerard Wallen.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for joining us today. I thought we'd begin in the most elementary of ways. Could you tell us what beer is and how it differs from craft beer or non-craft, how craft and non-craft beer differ?
Well, I guess to start off, what beer is, it's hard to say what came first, bread or beer, but either way, beer is believed to be one of the first things to come after humanity moved into agrarian societies. That's because it's fairly simple. There's only four ingredients. There's water, grain, hops, and yeast. Sometimes other ingredients are used to, you know, enhance flavors. But it's an interaction between the yeast and the grain that's called fermentation that creates the carbon dioxide that makes it fizzy and the alcohol that makes it beer. So
okay.
That's kind of a quick beer 101.
All right. And so what is craft beer and how does it differ from non-craft beer or regular beer?
It's generally believed, according to guidelines from the Brewers Association, which is a trade group for craft brewers that's based in Boulder, Colorado. And I can't off the top of my head give you the exact specifics, but it's basically they are small, producing less than 6 million barrels a year. They are independently owned, and they... they're small, they're independently owned, they're not owned by corporations.
Right.
And, you know, conglomerates and such things.
So it doesn't, it's Peter here. Hi, Gerard.
Hi, Peter.
Hey, so it doesn't have so much to do with the ingredients as it does with the size of the brewers? Is that, am I getting that right?
Well, it has a lot to do with the ingredients, but not officially. But when you talk about the craft brewers, they're small brewers, they experiment, they like to make beer with flavor, and it's more of an I don't want to say acquired taste, but once you get used to the variety of offerings from craft breweries, it's hard to go back to those fizzy yellow lagers that come from the big companies.
What factors do you think are contributing to what you call the exponential growth mode of the Florida brewery scene?
Several of them, just craft beer in general across the country is just growing exponentially. It all started back in the 70s when Jack McAuliffe started New Albion Brewing not far from San Francisco. And it just kind of started growing slowly, and then there was a spurt of brewery openings in the 90s, and then it slowed down. But then 2003, it really took off. There's more than nearly 2,800 operating craft breweries in the U.S. right now, and more than 1,700 being planned. Now, Florida's a little bit behind the wave for a few reasons. One of them is we're not out west where it started, so it took a while for it to get here.
Oh, that's interesting.
Right. And there were some container laws back it was in 1966, I believe, that it was first passed. Malt beverages could only be sold in containers of 8 ounce, 12 ounce, 16, or 32 ounce. So when the craft brewers started shipping 22 ounce bottles, what they call bombers, they couldn't ship them to Florida. And there's also the imports, of course, most of them use a metric system. So they couldn't ship it to Florida. And that was finally changed to allow anything up to 32 ounce in 2001. And that's when we started getting a lot of the craft beers from other parts of the country into our state.
Mm-hmm. You know, it seems that the Europeans, I think, have been enjoying what we would call craft beer maybe for centuries. But, you know, when I worked for a while at a hotel nightclub in Broward County here in South Florida, there were a lot of German visitors, and almost to a person, they asked for Budweiser. So, you know, what's that about? Do you think the attraction of a certain kind of beer is more about the fact that it's exotic than its appeal maybe to a sophisticated palate?
Were there other German beers available? I'd have to ask.
No. There was Heineken. Yeah, so that's interesting. That may have been at play there, huh?
Yeah, well, I mean, Budweiser was founded by the German immigrants, the Busch family. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, it technically is a style derived from Germany, you know, lager. So that may have been it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that may have been why they went for it. And, you know, if at the time, I'm sure it was, you know, the only type of light lager available, perhaps. I'm a little puzzled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know.
Be honest.
It was a surprise to me. Hey, can we get into some more terms here that I'm curious about?
Sure.
That have to do with craft beer. One is ABV, which I guess stands for alcohol by volume. So,
correct.
How does the alcohol content affect the flavor of a beer?
In a lot of ways, a higher ABV allows a more robust flavor for certain styles, such as stouts and IPAs. It also has a preservative effect. If you've ever heard of anyone cellaring their beer, which means aging it like wine, more or less, the higher the ABV, the more the better it is in most cases for cellaring. Mm-hmm. It will maintain the flavor, for longer. Now, there are certain lower ABV beers that are coming out now. Some people call them session IPAs, and they're between 4% and 5% ABV. So they're kind of like the beers that, you know, you could drink more than two of and still be able to walk home. You know, it's usually using the different varieties of hops that give those the flavor and combining it with the malts and balancing them. So there's a low ABV, the high ABV, and it just adds, you know, certain levels of flavor, I guess.
Are there laws limiting the alcohol content in beer?
Not in Florida. There are other states where it is. Ohio's one. I just came from Ohio last weekend.
And what is it limited to?
Oh, gosh. I want to say around 10%, which seems reasonable, but there are some beers out there that range up to, you know, 22%.
Oh.
Wow. And one other term I'd like to talk about, and that's IBU. What is that? International Bitterness Units. Do I have that right? And how that obviously has an effect on flavor as well.
Right. Basically measures the beer's bitterness on a established scale. Generally, the higher the IBU, the more bitter the beer is. But with the use of certain malts and sometimes ABV figures in, you could actually have a high IBU beer that isn't necessarily as bitter on the mouth as you would expect.
Gerard, what about this? I read about a growing sour beer movement. What's that?
Sour beer. Well, it's essentially what it sounds like. it's beer that is beer styles that have a sour or kind of funky odor.
Yeah.
They use certain types of yeast to achieve that.
I see.
And you know, it's an acquired taste. I'm still working on it.
Oh, you haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah, I've had some. I've had some I really liked, and I had some that I pretty much poured out because I just couldn't drink it. But it's a wide spectrum from just like a little bit of tartness to something that will, you know, curl your tongue, basically.
You know, speaking of tartness, is beer tasting akin to wine tasting? What do you look for when you're – do they have beer tastings?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are beer tastings. There's beer beer competitions, and there's certified beer judges. And I am not one of them, so I can't talk specifically about how they do it. Mm-hmm. But essentially, they just they're style guidelines for each style. And they taste it to see how closely the beer adheres to that style and rate it that way.
Mm-hmm. You know, craft brew drinkers seem to be very focused on the flavors in their beers. And there seems to be an emphasis on pairing certain brews with specific foods. Mm-hmm. Do you have any examples of that, of what kind of beers go with what kind of foods?
Well, again, I'm not the expert, but it's I would say that it's complementary or contrasting is what I usually hear. For instance, a spicy IPA might pair well with perhaps, you know, Mexican dish, or something sweet, which would be the complement, might also pair with it well.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Gerard Wallen, and he's written... He's the author of Florida Breweries. He's also the founder of the beerinflorida.com website. On today's Topical Currents, a short break, and we'll be right back. And welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman, Peter Jay, and we're visiting with Gerard Wallen. He's a contributing writer for several publications and the author of Florida Breweries. If you have a question, if you're a craft beer aficionado, or if you're not want to learn more, please call us. Our number is 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-WLRN, or you can email radio@WLRN.org, or you can tweet us at Topical Currents.
All right, Gerard, Peter, back with you here. So I want to ask you, do you remember your first time, that is, when you discovered your first craft beer?
That's a good question. And, you know, it's kind of hard to say because I kind of evolved from the mass-produced lagers to craft beer. But I remember a few specifically, one being Chimay, which is a Belgian Abbey Ale. It's quite popular and pretty available. But I tasted that and just realized, wow, this is what beer can be. So there was that. And then as I started, you know, experimenting with different types of beer and developed my palate, I can't look back now.
Mm-hmm. You know, for me, Bonnie and Gerard, it was an article in a New Yorker issue, and I think it was 2008. I looked it up online to remember when it came out, and it was about, most specifically, about the Dogfish Head Brewery in mm-hmm. Delaware, and they were talking about this IPA, which I guess is India Pale Ale, and I thought, what is this about? And I was very interested in the article because these people were obviously kind of renegades, you know, in the brewing business. And it was a couple of months later, I was in Oregon, and I found something that was labeled IPA on the shelf. It was the Deschutes, which is a local Portland mm-hmm. brand, and went on from there. But apparently, Dogfish Head is still really popular. I see it in the supermarkets now. They're expanding like crazy. Are they still a powerhouse player? Are they going to be able to retain their craft beer status as they move forward, Gerard?
Oh, absolutely. I'm pretty sure they're in the top 10 production of craft breweries, but Boston Beer Company, who makes Sam Adams, they make right around 2.5 million barrels. The limit to be defined as a craft brewery is 6 million. So you know, they still got a ways to go. But yes, Dogfish Head makes some wonderful beer. And Sam Caligioni, the founder, is a evangelist and spokesperson and a face for the craft beer movement and has been for a long time.
How and when did you get involved with beer journalism?
I was in the newspaper industry. I worked in at the Sarasota Herald Tribune for 10 years, my last position there. And that's kind of where my craft beer palate evolved, because there are a lot of people there who I worked with who were really into it, and I listened to them. But I left there at 2009 and sought out a freelance career. A woman who had a series of websites called Road Trips for, you know, various things, families, couples, etc., was starting one up called Road Trips for Beer. And I got connected with her, and so I started that and brought it up, you know, brought it up from the beginning. And that kind of got me into the whole specialization of writing about the craft beer scene. Uh-huh. And it just kind of evolved from there.
Now, I noticed a question on your blog asks about this particular book you've written about South, mm-hmm. about Florida breweries. The question asks, you really visited them all, like in person? and your answer is?
Yes. Of the 66 breweries that have chapters, I physically visited each one to talk to someone about the brewery.
And sampled their wares, I assume?
Yes, but unlike, I believe you mentioned in the beginning, I did not drink all of their beers.
Okay.
I'd still be working on the book.
So, you know, if you'd like to call in and find out about craft beer, or if you'd like to tell us about your favorite, or if you own a local brewery, now we're looking for your calls, waiting to hear from you at 800-743-9576. We'd love to hear your story. 1-800-743-9576. Email is radio@wlrn.org. And Gerard, your
yes.
book lists no brewer or brew pub in Miami proper or Miami Beach, right?
That is correct.
Why is that?
Well, first, a disclaimer, there was one.
Ah, okay.
The Gordon Biersch Brewery that was in downtown Miami, which unfortunately closed after I wrote the chapter. But fortunately, I was able to get it out, so I didn't have a brewery that didn't exist. Why there weren't breweries when I wrote the book in Miami, it puzzles me a little bit.
Uh-huh.
But that is rapidly changing. There's at least what Wynwood Brewing I know is open, and right down the road is going to be Jay Wakefield Brewery, and in between them Concrete Beach Brewing, which I believe is a Boston Beer Company project. But they're all going to be right there in the Wynwood District within walking distance of each other.
Oh, that's nice. Actually, we're doing next week, next Thursday, Linda Gassenheimer is having on an artisan baker.
Oh.
And we're going to talk about the craft beer the breweries that are opening up in Wynwood.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
And I also noticed in your book, you said the only brewery in Florida's 2,000-mile coastline that's on the beach is right here in Hollywood.
That's correct.
I guess the real estate's too expensive to open a brewery, you think?
Well, real estate price is a big consideration when someone's opening a brewery. But yes, the organic brewery there on Hollywood Beach, I went to visit there for the book.
You've been there?
Got done with my interview with the general manager and walked out and was just so displeased that I had an appointment, because I just wanted to hang out there the rest of the day. It's just right on the beach.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So which is the largest craft brewery in the state, Gerard, and how does their output compare to, say, Anheuser-Busch?
Gosh, I wish I had the numbers. I just saw a list. Cigar City is, I believe, the largest by volume and sales, and they just recently got into that.
I just discovered the High Lie IPA, which I really like.
Oh, that's an excellent beer.
Big wallop of citrus and really nice flavor.
Yeah, it's one of my go-tos for sure.
Mm. So how does without citing specific numbers, I mean, is it like a tenth the size of an Anheuser-Busch or smaller than that?
Oh, gosh, even.
Yeah, tiny fraction. Huh?
Tiny fraction. Mm. I mean, the craft beer industry combined is still less than 10% of the entire beer sales in the United States.
Mm. Oh, you know what, market. Gerard? Mm-hmm. Excuse me. I just read in USA Today, it was pointed out, there was an article in there. Right. It said it was 10%, but now last year it grew to more than 14%.
Mm. Right.
So, I mean, it's growing, and the overall U.S. beer consumption, they said, has declined.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the craft beer movement is growing.
Yeah, well, actually, you're right. Sales-wise, it's over 10%. I did jot down a couple of numbers here. It's 7.8% of the total volume. Now, it's had 18% growth in volume and 20% in sales in 2013 from the previous year.
Wow.
And but still, it's still a tiny drop compared to the overall beer market.
Well, I think a couple of harbingers of things to come are, first of all, that you can now find 4 packs of Dogfish Head 90 Minute in public supermarkets. And also, as a matter of fact, that High Lie IPA is there as well.
Yes.
And I note in your book that there's a craft brewery on the Disney World property. So tell us about the Big River and how it came to find a home with Disney.
Okay. It's part of a chain, a chain of brew pubs. It's based in Nashville. The company is called Craftworks. It's basically a business decision between, the two companies, Disney and Craftworks, on locating the pub there. It's on the Boardwalk Resort, which is right outside the back gate of Epcot. I don't know if you've ever been there. But it's the brewer, Kent Wall, is a good friend of mine. He's very talented. He won a silver medal the year before last for one of his beers at the Great American Beer Festival, which was really impressive coming out of a little place like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot of fun. It's right there on the, it's made up to be like a, 1920s New Jersey boardwalk.
Right.
And, you can just sit out there and drink handcrafted beer and people watch or take a break from the parks, have some dinner or, it's a really cool place.
Yeah, a real sign of, encroachment into American culture, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, we have some callers. We have lots of callers. Are you ready to speak to Gene in Fort Lauderdale? Has an interesting question. Hi, Gene. Welcome. Or
yes.
Jean?
Is yes. It?
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. You're on Topical Currents.
Yes, I'm interested in the development of all the new beers, and I'm wondering if there already is, or is there a prospect of having non-alcoholic brew beers?
Mm. That's a good question. I know the major beer companies produce some non-alcoholic versions. I can't think of any craft breweries that are doing it, to be honest. There are some that make some gluten-free beer, which is a specific market, but I off the top of my head I can't think of any craft breweries that make a non-alcoholic version, although anyone who knows different is free to call in and correct me.
Yes, and let's plant the idea for the development.
Okay.
Here. I agree with that. I'm a fan of a beer called Klosthaler, which is an import non-alcoholic, which is really has some substantial flavor. Mm-hmm. That would be a great project for craft brewers.
Yeah, really.
Sure.
Good question, Gene.
Yes,
Alyssa wants to know, what are some of the subtleties of flavors in Florida craft beers?
As far as the flavors that are unique to...
Yeah, are there?
Florida beers?
Yes.
Well, there's a particular style based on the Berliner Weiss style out of Germany. It's a wheat beer. It's low alcohol, very refreshing, and a lot of Florida brewers have adopted this and evolved it to include local fruits, local tropical fruit and citrus and such things. And we are calling it Florida Vice. And it's a bit tart, a little sour, not over the top, very low, 2 to 4% ABV. And so I would say that is really developing as the style for Florida.
Okay. Do we want to go to Jim in Sunrise? Hi, Jim. Welcome to Topical Currents.
Hi, how are you? I look forward to your book. My question is this. Of course, we know about the big three, Anheuser-Busch, Miller's, and Coors, who dominated for so many years and basically took over the thousands of community beers. And now we see the growth of craft beer. And although the number of craft beer breweries is more than doubled, as I think you said, around 2,500, the sales have doubled too, which means that no one brewery is really succeeding per se, except for a handful who are likewise dominating craft beers. I know one writer that I follow has stated that we're looking forward to a big crash in craft beers as there's a shakeout in the market. And I wonder what your guest would have to say about that.
Okay, Gerard.
I do not believe there's a crash coming. I was an assistant business editor at the newspaper during the housing crash and at the end of the tech crash. So I know what crashes look like and bubbles. One example that I've heard that I think illustrates as well is there are 10,000 or more wineries in the country and, less than 3,000 or less than 4,000 breweries. So I think, looking at it in that sense, there's still a lot of room to grow. And another thing you have to consider is a lot of these breweries, the vast majority, are very, very local. They sometimes produce beer only for their tap room. So it's kind of like what it was back in the late 1800s in the United States when there were like more than 4,100 breweries. And I think the high point is in 1873, there were 4,100 breweries, and that's the most that's ever been operating in the U.S. And then that's kind of like with seeds of prohibition starting then. So it kind of started to dwindle, but there were still, half that many when prohibition did come into effect. So I see a lot of room for growth. One thing I hear is people saying there's not enough shelf space in grocery stores. Mm-hmm. I have been to grocery stores out west that have an entire wall of craft beer. Right. So the shelf space is there. It's just, will they devote it to the craft beer?
Right. Yeah. Thanks for calling, Jim.
Thank you.
Okay. And did you want to?
Yeah. We have an email from Carl in Plantation asking kind of a related business question.
Right.
Carl says, craft brewing has evolved from a hobby into a successful business model for many, perhaps too successful, attracting the ire of big company breweries. What are the political issues of regulation that craft brewers face from the big commercial breweries attempting to control or limit the distribution of craft beers?
Yes, legislature.
Mm-hmm.
If you've been following it, if you follow politics at all, that there was a big dust up in the legislature this year involving breweries and beer distributors.
It was kind of two things, right, Jordan? Right. It was the container size, and then they tagged on this thing about craft brewers having to distribute through the big distributors. Right.
Well, it started as the container law I mentioned earlier. It allows up to 32 or 128 or over. So a brewery can sell a 32-ounce growler or a 128-ounce growler, but they can't sell a 64-ounce growler, which is the industry standard in 47 other states.
Why is that, by the way? Can I
answer? When they changed the law in 2001, they just basically left that. It had a donut hole in it because no one really was thinking about growlers.
But why is that? Why is that such an attractive size for craft brewers?
Well, it's 4 pints, which is nice to take home, and like you and your significant other have a couple of pints with dinner. It's 32 ounces, it's good if you're drinking it by yourself, but if you're having company or at a party, or it's just a really good size.
Sorry to interrupt you.
No, that's fine. I mean, and it's a standard, so it's economically it's cheaper to buy that because the manufacturers make more of them. So that helps a brewery save a little money and go and put it back into expansion and growth. But that's how it started this year. Is they just wanted to change that donut hole,
right?
And allow 64-ounce growlers. Well, the lobbyist for the Florida Beer Wholesalers Association, which represents, is mostly the Anheuser or AB InBev distributors, Anheuser-Busch, they wanted to add a lot of regulations that would, in some cases, restrict the growth of craft breweries.
Mm-hmm.
And so it went back and forth. Amendments were added, amendments were taken off. There were at one point like almost a dozen bills making their way through various committees. And in the end, they came close to reaching a compromise. The final bill was a lot closer to what everybody wanted than the original one after it was, after the amendments were added, but it ended up dying.
Yeah.
So the media kind of portrayed it as,
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, I didn't do that, right?
No.
I didn't touch anything.
No. Innocent.
But a lot of the media portrayed it as big beer versus little beer. In the most simplistic terms, that's what it was. But it was a lot more complicated than that. There was a lot of things going on in the back rooms. There still are people mm-hmm. behind the scenes trying to – both sides want something that'll work for everybody. So they're still working on that.
After the dust clears, though, there's still no 32-ounce growler?
64-ounce.
64-ounce, sorry.
Mm-hmm. No, although a brewery in St. Pete, Cycle Brewing, during the hubbub, posted some pictures of two 32-ounce taped together and called it Florida 64-ounce growler.
Love it.
Okay, let's go to the phone. We have Amita in Miami. Hi, Amita. Welcome to Topical Currents.
Hi, thanks very much. I just wanted to first say that I'm pretty excited about this book, and I actually just read about it in the Florida Edible magazine.
Well, thank you.
If you're familiar with that one, there was a little article on it recently, and mm-hmm. I think it's great because I recently took a trip to Colorado for my birthday for basically a beer brewery tour, and it was amazing because, I went to 18 breweries, and the culture out there is completely different than the beer culture here in South Florida. And I'm very excited to see that beer culture increase. And going back to your growler comment, there is now one gas station apparently in Miami that actually has growlers.
Uh-oh. I guess they better watch out.
But there are 32-ounce growlers, but I know that hopefully we want the legislation to change. But I'm wondering, in your experience and from what you've spoken to with some of the other vendors, if they're going to start expanding their outreach. Because I know that the growlers that they sell at the gas station here are only from Miami Brewery, which is obviously Schnebly, and they also have one from the Floridian up in, is it Dania or Del Rey or something?
Florida Beer Company?
Yeah, the Florida Beer
Company. Yeah, they're out of Cape Canaveral.
So, I don't know, do you see them, some of the smaller craft breweries here in Florida, trying to reach out and sell off-premises the growlers more?
The people who can sell growlers, or the retailers who can sell growlers, is kind of a gray area in the laws. Shortly before, or I think very early this year, the ABC Fine Wine and Spirits chain started setting up growler stations in some of their stores. I've heard of that gas station and other smaller venues that have been selling legal growlers.
Are they in Miami or South Florida that sell growlers off premises?
I think there's a homebrew shop down there that does it as well, that has like guest taps, but I can't remember what it is, and I'd rather not call them out anyway, just in case,
Right. Right.
In case they shouldn't be.
Right, exactly. But it's interesting. So I've heard both sides of it from brewers, like, let's get it out. Let's get people to taste our beer, no matter how. And, that'll be good for all of us. Or I don't want someone who doesn't know how to handle it, how I want to handle it, handling it. you know.
Well, I can tell you that I worry about that. Appreciate being able to get craft beer, right, you know, a few blocks from my house rather than having to drive to Homestead or somewhere else.
Oh, absolutely. And those gray areas about the growler, that's one of the things that was trying to be cleared up, so to speak.
I mean, we're one of only like 3 or 4 states in all of the United States that don't allow the larger growlers.
Oh, absolutely.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yes, that is correct. And I have actually seen people walk into breweries with 64-ounce growlers from other states and try to get them filled. They're just flabbergasted.
Test, yeah.
Yeah, they're just flabbergasted when they find out they can't in Florida.
Mm. Yeah, I lived in New York, and you could walk into Whole Foods or Trader Joe's and get a 64-ounce growler filled.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I just wanted to thank you again for your book, and it seems like it's going to be a self-perpetuating sort of thing since the craft beer industry is growing so much. You're going to have to do a new one every year.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Amita. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Appreciate you taking my call.
Okay. We have emails, we have calls, we have Scott on the line, and we're going to give the number out. But first, we have to take a short break on today's Topical Kerns. We are speaking with Gerard Wallen, and he's the author of Florida Breweries and the founder of BeerInFlorida.com website. Stay with us, and we'll be right back.
Tonight in a bar alone I'm sitting apart from the laughter and the cheer, while scenes from the past rise before me, just watching the bubbles in my beer.
Yeah, you tell him, Willie.
Oh, I know that my life.
Thank you, Paul.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. Great to have you here with us on this edition of Topical Currents. Peter J., along with our host, Bonnie Berman. I'm sitting in today and having fun talking about one of my favorite subjects, and that is craft beer. And if you'd like to talk about it, your phone call is welcome at 800-743-9576. And that's not the pledge line. That's the number, the call of the
yes,
show.
Yes, they're not used to hearing your voice
that's
without
right,
that
that's
pledge
right.
line.
800-743-9576. Email us at radio@wlrn.org.
Okay, let's talk to Scott. And now we have some lines open because Scott's been waiting for a while about the alcohol content.
You?
Hey, Scott.
Hey there. How are you? Thank you for answering my call. Doesn't this brewers or breweries of this craft beer, doesn't it fall like in legalized marijuana here in the state of Florida?
Didn't quite understand that. Could you repeat that question, please?
Well, yeah, I mean, these craft beers, because, I mean, doesn't, of course, it has to be legalized first before going into production, right?
Well, sure. I mean, beer has been legal
right.
for quite some time. I hope so, or I'm in big trouble.
But I mean, the competition doesn't like the competition, right? Like the big beer companies.
Oh,
you're
are
saying
they
that the small craft
by?
Beers don't like the big beer companies are threatened.
Yeah, and another thing too. How many drunk drivers are we going to have? You know, having more beers in the market. Do you have any idea about that?
Okay, thanks for calling, Scott Gerard.
Well, I would like to say that I don't know of a single brewery that I've visited ever that does not encourage responsible drinking. you mentioned competition. I think that's an interesting aspect of the craft brewing industry in general is, and any it's unique among any business I've ever seen. Any kind of industry, and in that each of them are supportive and collaborative of the others. I've been run into so many examples of, let's say, one brewery runs out of a certain type of grain they need to brew that morning. They'll call up the brewery, craft brewery down the road, say, hey, do you have any of this? Yeah, sure, come pick it up and just pay us back when you get your delivery. And that happens not only all over this state, but all over the country. And it's essentially the way I've heard it explained is they're not competing against each other. They're competing against the big guys.
Mm.
So everyone sticks together in order to raise the entire industry.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you a couple of business-related questions here, Gerard. How much of an investment is typically involved in starting up a craft beer brewery? You have any idea what kind of, you know, costs there are to start up a brewery?
Hundreds of thousands. Mm-hmm. It depends. I mean, there's some breweries that are starting up with relatively huge brewing systems right now. 30 to 50 barrel, which is a really good size for a startup brewery. Mm-hmm. And there's others that are starting up with, a one barrel system. So, it essentially is, the investment depends on what you're aiming for.
How willing are banks to finance craft brewer startups? Do you have any idea?
A lot more than they used to be. Mm-hmm. when Jack McAuliffe first started New Albion back in the 70s, from what I've read and heard, is banks pretty didn't know what to make of them.
Sure.
They're a small brewery. There's no such thing. But the pioneers who came shortly after him face the same things. But I think it's becoming such a viable business model that it's becoming a lot easier for banks and investors to make, justify becoming part of it.
Gerard, Brian wants to know, he said there used to be a brewery in Davie called Brewmasters where they would let you pick a recipe or create your own, then sell you the ingredients and instruct and assist you from boiling to bottling and brewing your own beer on the premises. He said they unfortunately closed. Are you aware of any similar establishments? And if not, how difficult is it to brew at home?
Mm. Yes. I do know of. Okay. Google home brewing shops and try to find one near you. Nearly all of them offer some sort of program like that. If they don't, they will advise you along the way. We just had National Homebrew Day in early this month, where they had home brew clubs across the country would get together and they brew outside at certain places, and people could come by and see how it works. Just start exploring, and that's another good thing about this industry is, you can walk into a craft brewery in the tasting room and explain what you're looking for, and 99 times out of 100 they'll say, oh yeah, you just need to go down to blah blah blah, and they'll help you out. I home brew. I do 5 gallons at a time using what's called an extract kit. I learned how to do it by watching, but I really learned by a video series that's on the internet that showed how to do it. So, there's a lot of ways to learn how to start brewing, and it's a great hobby.
Not easy, though, right? I remember having friends I've had who have made attempts that were less than stellar in their results. Mm-hmm. So did it take you a while to really get a handle on brewing, home brewing?
No, not really. And what I've heard said is that if you can make a bowl of chili, you can make beer.
Oh, wow.
That sounds good.
Or rather, a pot of chili. but it's a little more complicated than that. You really need to be well aware of sanitation. And temperature control while you're brewing, keeping things the right temperature at the right stages. But other than that, once you put it in the fermenter, and after the first few days of fermenting, you kind of need to keep an eye on it to make sure it doesn't boil over or get too hot or too cold. And then after that, you just let it sit and it becomes beer.
Okay. James in Boynton Beach he's involved with craft beer. Hi, James. Welcome to Topical Currents.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Go ahead. Thanks for calling.
I'm in the restaurant industry, and I have been fortunate enough to work with companies that are big into craft beers and bringing them into the restaurant to design them around the cuisine that we use. And that being said, I've been doing the restaurant industry for over 35 years, and what I've learned is what's going on now is kind of, in the United States anyway, is that the approach to the craft beer is the same as it was probably about 15 years ago, when there was more of a, let's say, people coming out and experimenting with wines and the combination of food and wine together. With that growth, that has come up about 25% I believe in the last 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
So the restaurants I'm at, we have over 14 taps of different craft beers that are locally brewed in South Florida and out of Tampa as well.
Oh, that's
What I did want to say is that you were talking about the bigger companies earlier and how they, you know, are not trying to support the local craft brewers. And I know a couple of years ago, one of the tactics that they used was they bought up all, they tried to buy all the Slims, which is a half a keg in the state of Florida. I'm not going to name the bigger company that tried. Mm-hmm. So it would limit the craft beer brewers in the state of Florida to production.
Hmm.
So there is a beer war of sort.
They don't want
to lose any of their market, even if it's to a small person.
What do you think, Gerard?
There are certainly have been shady tactics used by beer distributors that I've heard of. I've not heard of that particular one. I think they are starting to realize, though, that they need craft beer because it is the growing part of the market, and they're starting to make more accommodations and put more effort into getting taps into different restaurants. Which, by the way, I want to go by your restaurant that you're talking about. It sounds great. I think it's the mindset is starting to change to a certain degree.
Hey, Gerard, have any of the big boys spawned their own local craft breweries?
They have attempted. Mm-hmm. If you see things like beers like Blue Moon or Shock Top, those mm-hmm. are produced by MillerCoors and AB InBev, respectively. There is a bit of a controversy about they are trying to muscle their way into the craft beer market, with slightly dishonestly because they don't say,
that does not say
on the label that that's who manufactures it.
Yeah.
But yes, they are definitely waking up to it.
And how do they stack up to the real thing? That's a prejudicial question.
I don't think they do. Say that.
Okay, okay.
Gerard, tell us about your association with the Florida United for craft brews organization. What is that?
Absolutely. It's a result of the what's going on in the legislature. There was an enormous outpouring of emails and phone calls to the senators and representatives involved in the various bills from the craft drinking public. But it was all kind of, there was no central voice for what we call the fourth tier, which is the three-tier system, is the manufacturer, the distributor, the retailer. And the fourth tier would be the consumer. So a group of us, beer geeks, got together, and we're forming a corporation or a nonprofit called Florida United for Craft Brews. Our goal is to be the voice of the fourth tier, the consumer, the general public, the craft beer community. So it's we're hoping it develops into something that will allow those who are not in the three tiers, who are involved, allow them to have a voice. We have a website, doesn't have anything on it other than a link to our Facebook page, but it is fucb.org.
Okay, and we'll have a link to that. Well, Gerard Wallen, unfortunately, we've run out of time. We have so many calls and emails. We apologize that we couldn't get to you more.
Oh, that's fine.
Yeah. Gerard Wallen is a contributing writer for several publications. He's the author of Florida Breweries and founder of beerinflorida.com, that website. And we want to thank you for being with us today. Thank you.
Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, thanks, Gerard. It was a pleasure. I look forward to downing a beer with you sometime.
Absolutely. I should be in South Florida, actually, at the end of this month.
Ah, stop by.
All right, look us up.
Funky Buddha first anniversary, May
3rd. All right.
And thank you for being with us today. Special thanks to Peter J. for all his assistance today. Our producer is Richard Ives. Technical direction from our online producer and music consultant, Paul Leary. Free audio archives and downloads downloads at our website, WLRN.org. Tomorrow at this time, it's Ed Bell for another edition of South Florida Arts Beat. Monday, we present a Memorial Day special, and we return Tuesday.